Hello, everybody. Again, the next speaker is going to be Dr. Barry Durham Peatfield. Very big welcome to him. I think practically all of you must know about him now. Dr. Peatfield is a specialist consultant in the diagnosis and treatment of metabolic and thyroid-related diseases. We are proud of the fact that not only is he a medical advisor to thyroid patient advocacy, he's also a trustee and patron. His talk today is going to be about causes of hypothyroid symptoms and why thyroxine only doesn't work. So I know many of you are in this situation, so you'll be very interested to hear what he's actually got to say about this, and hopefully you'll learn quite a lot. So, Dr. Peatfield.
Can everybody hear me? Well, I want to file your ears down a bit today and explain to you and answer a question which I'm continually being asked every day of my life, which is, Dr. Peatfield, why have I got this thyroid condition? And why is it, although they've been treating me, I'm still not very good? Now, the first thing I want to say about this is that hypothyroidism is much more common than doctors will admit. You'll read that it may only be a few percent of the population, which, since this is what most doctors are brought up to believe, may be a reason why they're so reluctant to consider the diagnosis and test for it. Preferring to believe, of course, that you're too old, too young, too depressed, etc., possibly to have a thyroid problem. In fact, the incidence of thyroid disorder is probably 10 times this. And my great teacher, Professor Jacques Hertogger, thought it was 40 or 50%. Not all needing treatment, but all with thyroid issues. By middle life, so many of us have an issue. Hypothyroidism is a disease of modern life, foodstuffs, toxins, unsuitable treatments. We may be sure that our ancestors were less troubled. Just a word about the overactive thyroid, hypothyroidism or Graves' disease. I don't actually think this is more common, and it remains just a few percent of the population. The underlying problem is some kind of stimulation of the thyroid cells to overdo their job. Antibodies produced by the immune system start to wind up these cells, and excess thyroid hormone production is Graves' disease. And an excess of thyroid is produced, which, as you know, overruns the metabolism. A variety of this scenario, first of all, does the winding up bit, and then the antibodies work to shut down the cells. And this is called Hashimoto's disease and is a very common cause of hypothyroidism. If one asks carefully, one may find that before all the symptoms of hypothyroidism started, there was an overactive phase for a while. Another cause of overactivity is where the pituitary gland, which controls thyroid hormone output, goes into overdrive, sometimes due to some kind of overgrowth, and pushes out too much thyroid-stimulating hormone, and so winds up the cells making the thyroid hormone. Sometimes the hypothalamus, which is part brain, part gland, which sits just above the pituitary, remember, is over-revved by life stress. So the hypothalamus produces too much thyrotropic release hormone, which makes the pituitary produce too much TSH, and that does it. Bottom line on this is that the overactive thyroid may, given time, settle down on carbimazole or propylthiouracil. So you resist the thyroid doctors and surgeons who want to cut your throat or nuke you with radioactive iodine. It goes on, of course, you may not have much choice. Okay, we've got thyroid overactive side out of the way, so let's see why thyroid underactivity occurs and why it's so common. The old-fashioned name for this, you know, is myxedema. Now, we do see this sometimes in people who, after a while, have got really very bad and are fat, bloated, puffy, asleep all the time, cold, no air, intractably constipated, depressed and can't think straight. if we do see this today, I do occasionally, and I'm sure Dr. Skinner does, it represents a dramatic failure of diagnosis and care. Let's have a look at the causes of failure of thyroid function. Well, you can be born with it. A recessive gene which mum and dad both have. The standard scenario is to have no thyroid at all. And the technical name for this is cretin. The baby has a protuberant abdomen, generally unresponsive, sticky out tongue, poor feeder. A HEAL test for blood is usually done at birth. So most of these, though not all, soon get picked up and treated. Sometimes the deficiency is not total, and so less obvious, and may come on after weeks or years, as if the whole thing is programmed to slow down as the years go by. And people who develop a hyperthyroid state, and it's just slow, 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 for no obvious reason, these people probably have got a pre-programmed failure, which is going to get them. There may be a genetic program to develop Graves' disease or Hashimoto's disease as you grow up. It is perfectly possible for autoimmune thyroiditis to occur seemingly out of the blue and cause either condition. Hashimoto's disease is the commonest cause of hyperthyroidism and is simply diagnosed by checking on antibodies in the blood. While the other tests, the TSH, T4 and T3, are carried out. Next big cause we can group under environmental toxins and deficiencies. We eat so badly these days, with food stuffed with weird chemicals, which poison us generally and have a disruptive effect on our glands and systems as a whole. The thyroid and adrenal glands seem particularly vulnerable. You can see what modern food does to us. The obesity epidemic is evident everywhere we look. We eat badly anyway, but look what our food does to us. Considering the chemicals which make war on us, two are fluorine and chlorine. Fluorine has a very bad effect on the enzymes making thyroid hormones, so anyone living in a high fluoride area is at risk. This is northeast England, Wolverhampton, Birmingham, most of Ireland. Fluoride is given in the mistaken notion that hardening the teeth makes them resistant to dental caries. Now, the evidence for this is pretty damn weak. All we need to do is to eat less sugar. But dentists seem convinced and give us fluoride toothpaste, mouthwash, fluoridate our water, and forget that it is so amazingly and frightfully poisonous that 2 or 3 parts per million can be bad for you. The amount, something you didn't know, the amount in the average fluoride toothpaste is actually a lethal dose. Whopping 1,500 parts per million. Or would be if we didn't spit it out. Get much in tea, since tea grows in fluorine-rich soil. And it's the 12 strong cup of tea a day people I'm pointing the finger at. Chlorine is the same family as fluorine. We can't really avoid it because it's put in all our water. But I can think of 2 teenage swimming prospective champions, my acquaintance, who both became hyperthyroid from excessive exposure to chlorine in their swimming pools. And who knows what all the binders, preservatives, colorants, taste enhancers in our food can do to our thyroid glands. Foods such as cabbage, kale, turnips, sprouts naturally contain thiouracil, which, unless you give them a thorough, good English cooking, boil them, shuts down thyroid hormone production. There are deficiencies in foodstuffs which can lessen the amount of thyroid hormones produced. Particularly, we can think of selenium, tyrosine, iodine, vitamin B6. Many of us are chronically short in some of these. Most of you know about iodine and goiters, Derbyshire neck, for example. And of course, we've been told about, must I remind you about, vitamin D deficiency. Pregnancy and surgery. Having babies puts weight on, as you know, and hopefully you lose it after birth. But pregnancy is a major onslaught on our glandular system. And after several goes, it may not recover fully. And it's the thyroid that bears the brunt of this. Perhaps this is why women are 6 times more likely to get hypothyroid than us lads. Surgery sometimes does it, particularly cholecystectomy and hysterectomies. The menopause frequently doesn't help either. As menopause approaches, your progesterone level drops, but not so much the estrogen. Now, this imbalance is called estrogen dominance. And the dominant estrogen adversely affects thyroid hormone production and uptake into the tissues. So much so that many of you girls become hypothyroid at the menopause. And the HRT, which usually has extra estrogen, just makes it worse. I'm devoting a little bit more to adrenal insufficiency. Most of you know how important I consider adrenal support to be in the management of successful thyroid supplementation. Being ill with low thyroid and other illnesses and chronic stress will cause, in time, adrenal fatigue. So this has to be addressed while the thyroid is being treated. But life events, glandular fever, chronic illness can cause so much strain to the adrenals that as they suffer, they can drag the thyroid down with them. Since weak adrenals mean you cannot process thyroid hormone properly, you may find yourself being treated for thyroid and the result disappointing or wearing off because of the unrecognized adrenal problem. If you mention adrenals to your GP or even your endocrinologist, you'll commonly get a blank stare. Anything that damages the adrenal function can cause hypothyroidism at the same time or later. Similarly, if your pituitary gets hit by anything, a tumour is quite common, its progressive failure will affect the thyroid and adrenal glands as well. Many people wonder about their pituitary, but it is uncommon as a primary cause. Of course, it gets affected by thyroid and adrenal insufficiency and will run down to some degree sometimes. And this running down may cause a low TSH, which is then not the result of too much thyroid replacement, as your doctor will tell you, but actually too little. Another major cause is previous treatment of the overactive thyroid. Surgery or nuking is pretty final, and very commonly after a while, the thyroid shuts down finally and completely. So you have to have replacement therapy for life. So don't let them talk you into being nuked or having a throat cut, unless there's no alternative. Now, for the second part of this lecture today, I'm going really fast, aren't I? I'm going to answer the question I have to answer nearly every day of my life, is this. Look, I'm taking thyroxine for my doctor, and he says my tests show that my levels are perfectly all right. But I know I'm not right, and I have symptoms every day of my life. My doctors say I'm depressed, but I'm no better if I take antidepressants. So he says, I can't help you, and there must be something else. I think he thinks I'm making it up. How can this be? What is it all about? All right, well, reason number one, that thyroxine may not be doing the job. Now, I'm not saying that it doesn't do the job. There are lots of people who are perfectly all right in thyroxine. It's just that I never see them. Why would they come? They're fine. So the people who come and see me are not happy. All right, well, number one reason is, well, perhaps the dose isn't right. Blood tests may not tell the whole story. For example, if you had your normal dose of thyroid the morning of the test may show you have higher levels than actually you have as the day wears on, and so give a false picture. You should not take your thyroid before the blood test. Take it after. Leave it a day or two before. In fact, the dose may not be right. Often it may be too low, partly because you didn't stop the thyroxine the day of the test. Equally often, though, I find the dose is too high because the thyroxine isn't being used properly and the too high amount builds up to toxic levels. A bit more about that in a second. Second reason, before your thyroid started to go wrong, it was making 5 different thyroid hormones. Thyroxine, T4, niacinamide, T3, diiodothionine, T2, monoiodothionine, T1 and calcitonin. You would have thought, wouldn't you, that if you wanted to put back what's missing, you would provide all the hormones as naturally as possible. Common sense? Not a bit of it. All the doctors and most endocrinologists will offer only a synthetic, mind you, form of one of these hormones, thyroxine, and hope that the system can do without the others or make them from the thyroxine. I think maybe the system can do without the others. But what's the logic of that? Why not copy nature as far as possible and provide the others? Why not indeed? Few doctors can ever see the logic of this approach, and the thought of giving natural thyroid seems heresy to them. And the GNC won't have it anyway. The natural thyroid we talk of is natural desiccated thyroid, available as Armour, Naturethroid, Westthroid, Erfathyroid, and Thyroid S from Thailand. They all work fine. And once you have natural thyroid, you never want anything else. I've told you, many of you, that I've been on Armour 25 years, which accounts for my unusual health and beauty, which most of you are too shy to mention. Third reason, now this is a bit more complicated. Most of you know that thyroxine is a precursor to the active thyroid hormone, liothyronine, or T3. So much so that thyroxine has a very low or absent biological activity. It has to change to the T3 form, which is the hormone that does the work and activates our metabolism. This change, or conversion, is done by removing one of 4 iodine atoms from the thyroxine, and there are 3-5 deiodinase enzymes that do this. All of us run on and need T3, every single one of us here. But the enzymes don't work by themselves and need hormones from the adrenals to act as cofactors or helpers. These hormones are the adrenal cortex hormones, cortisol mostly, but also DHA, pregnenolone, and others, androstenedione, corticosteroid, aldosterone. So if the adrenal glands aren't working properly, the enzymes don't work. And you can have all the thyroxine you like. If the adrenals don't work properly, you still can't make enough T3. You can be hypothyroid in the midst of plenty. So the third reason is that the adrenals are weakened, so you can't convert T4 to T3. This is very common and equally commonly unrecognized by doctors who don't believe adrenals have a role to play at all. If they can be persuaded to do the test for adrenals, the serum cortisol or the synaptin test, they either come back apparently normal or are misinterpreted. What you have to do is to provide adrenal support. Natural glandular concentrates and nutritional support from cortisol, and the conversion starts off again. Reason 4. If you've been ill with low thyroid for a long time, which will damage your adrenal glands anyway, your conversion enzymes may not work properly in spite of support to the adrenals. And this is by no means uncommon. When this happens, you have to have liothyronine or T3 already made. Most doctors don't understand about T3 and won't prescribe it at gunpoint and are convinced that you'll get osteoporosis and heart attacks, even though your system has been designed to use it and you've been using it all your life. Nevertheless, most tests properly interpreted will show low T3 and high T4. And the 24-hour urinary thyroid hormone test, the one we ask Genova Diagnostics to do, always shows it. The American T3, Cytomel or Cynomel, is excellent, available online and often dramatically effective. It's not particularly expensive, but what's even a minor expense is your health. And it's no use once the doctor says no. He says no. What we do cunningly is to get you to get it. Get really well and then stamp into the doctor's surgery and say, look, why do you think I'm so well? He said, well, I don't know. He said, look, I'm taking this T3 and I want you to prescribe it for me. You might get thrown out, of course. But it's worth a go.
You've got well because it's all in your head.
That's right. The placebo effect. Reason 5. Receptor resistance occurs when you've been ill so long that the tissue receptors can't respond properly. The partial uptake that results means that you can be very sensitive and it takes longer to respond to T3 or natural thyroid. You just have to be patient and work the doses up slowly and carefully. Reason 6, food sensitivities. With the length of time that you've been ill, the inevitable adrenal weaknesses, you develop food sensitivities. Inconvenient as these are, the other problem is that the uptake and processing of thyroid hormone can be interfered with these food sensitivities. One has to be patient and using an elimination test, find out what foods are causing the problem. Gluten, lactose, eggs, citrus fruits are very common. Now, what I make you all do is to pick a week and say, look, right, this week, I'm not having any bread. No bread at all, nothing. No bread, no biscuits, no cakes. And you ruthlessly exclude it all. Now, if you've got a sensitivity to gluten, by about the second or third day, you feel bad. You feel worse. But if you persist, by the end of the week, you actually start feeling better. And if you then, about on day 8 or 9, actually have yourself a big hunk of bread, you feel dreadful. And that'll prove you've got a gluten sensitivity. You can do this with all the others. With milk is, of course, a very common one, but then you've got eggs and all the other common things you have. And this is very, very common with so many of you with long histories of thyroid deficiency. Most of you actually have some sort of idea you've got a food sensitivity anyway. Because you say, well, of course I don't have bread. Of course it bloats me. I'll get constipated or something. Worth checking up. Reason 7. Candida can be such a problem and you may not have any overt symptoms of it. If present, it significantly interferes with the processing of thyroid and adrenal hormones and stops the treatment working properly. I make everybody who sees me do the old-fashioned Candida spit-in-the-glass test. A proper Candida antibody to see how bad it is. If you remember, you put a glass of water on your bedside table, full up, then you go to bed, and when you wake up in the morning, you have a grand spit in it, leave it for half an hour, go back and look at it. Is the spit floating? Does it have tails or filaments? If it does, there's every chance that you've got a Candida problem and you should have a proper test for it. Reason 8, other hormones. Imbalance in progesterone and estrogen in the girls and low testosterone in the lads may need to be checked, since if the levels are wrong, your processing and uptake of thyroid hormones will not work as it should. Anyway, all these hormones work together, and it only makes sense that you should run at optimum level. Reason 9. Number of deficiencies which make a significant difference. Let's list them. Vitamin C. You know I like most of you to have 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 milligrams a day. Coenzyme Q10. Ubiquinol. I take bloody 200, don't I? Won't do you any harm to that kind of level. It's an essential, natural hormone that you make yourselves. But most of us are short of it. Iron. Now, many of you girls are short of iron for reasons I needn't go on about. But some of you actually don't absorb it very well in your gut, so you are running chronically at a low iron level. And the doctor says, if he agrees to do it at all, we'll give you some crap stuff like ferrous sulfate. Penny a thousand. Marvellous pill. Penny a thousand. Crap. And it upsets most people. What's wrong with Spartone or Floridex over the counter? Vitamin B12. Nutri and other companies have excellent products. Ever so many of you are short of vitamin B12. And it interferes all these processes, and you don't necessarily have to check it. Just take it. It's cheap enough. Vitamin D3. Well, Russ has told us about that, and I won't go on about that. But you can realise how important it is in this country. And I take a version that you just squeeze into your mouth. Lovely dose of vitamin B. Vitamin D, and that is. Always have vitamin D3. You'll always be better if you do. The B group vitamins, well, of course, I think we all know how important these are. If you're having any kind of adrenal support and you use the natural one, you're going to get many of them in it. If you're not, you ought to have a general B group vitamin extra. And all the omega-3s. And also the other essential fatty acids, for God's sake, 6, 7, and 9. It all sounds a lot, but working through all these reasons can restore you to normal health, even after years. You're all different, and I encourage you to learn as much about it all as you can, so you can make your own decisions. You know now, this afternoon, more about your illness than your doctor does. Bit of a worry, and it's this knowledge that's the secret of being really well again. How kind. I've already written it. Yes. This follow-up, which is still being licked into shape, is actually a complete do-it-yourself manual. Now, this is generally unpopular in some quarters, who believe that you should not treat yourself. But it won't be unpopular here. And I say, if you don't treat yourself, who the hell's going to? You just have to learn about it. Okay, let you all off now.
We're now going to show you Paul's video about the circadian T3 method.